And Josh Warren with us. Your phone calls as we talk about demons and curses next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. We'll take your calls here with Joshua Warren. Joshua, are other customs a little more tuned in to demonic forces? You know, we've heard things like Santeria and voodoo. Are they more in touch with picking up stuff like that?
Absolutely. You know, there's no doubt about it. And the reason is that they still maintain and practice these roots that we have this tendency to disbelieve. And, you know, the funny thing is, I don't mean to sound too religious here, but, you know, in many religions that involve the devil, there is this sense that the devil's greatest skill is to deceive and to make you sort of believe that he doesn't exist. And what you find is that we are living in an age when more and more people are not believing that there is a devil or a God or any of that kind of stuff. And I'm not saying that it's correct to believe those things, but what I am saying is that if you have that point of view, you will lower your guard to what might be there, that you are potentially being victimized by on a bioenergy or spiritual level. And so these practices that have not become sort of influenced by our modern perspective are still very in tune with the idea that there are positive and negative forces. There are things that will enrich you, that will enhance your bioenergy, and there are things that will take from you. And a lot of these ancient traditions are the last bastions, so to speak, of understanding the purity of those levels on which good and evil exist and affect us every day.
No doubt. Every day indeed. Can we win in the long run? Can we defeat evil?
I think we can. In fact, you know, one of the things that I talked about in my free audiobook, The Oblivious Gods, that you can find at joshuapwarren.com, is this idea that ultimately we all thrive on selfishness. And selfishness is okay. I mean, that's what gives us the sort of inspiration to continue to live, to survive. But the difference is, how do you determine if you are being selfish without regard for others, or selfish with regard to others? Because in my opinion, evil is absolute selfishness without regard for the welfare of others. And good can certainly be selfishness with regard for the welfare of others. So what I mean by that is that when you help somebody, it makes you feel good, and cosmically, you will receive this positive flow of karma that will come to you. And so even doing good is a selfish act, and that's fine. That's why selfishness has existed. That's why the survival of the fittest has allowed us to remain, and our genes have been passed along, and well, here we are right now. But if you are selfish without regard for the welfare of others, well, then that's when we become destructive. We become self-destructive. And what I would like to see is a society in which we are understanding that it's good for us individually to give to others, to help the poor and the weak. I mean, as the Buddha said, you cannot be an island of happiness in an ocean of misery. It's easy for you to say, well, if my neighbor's house is burning, oh, well, that's too bad for him. But if you don't do anything about it, that fire will spread and your house will burn down as well. It's easy to overlook the sick and to say, oh, well, that's their problem. But if you don't treat the sick, their diseases will spread to you and your family as well. And so I am hoping that we are moving more toward a society that allows us to understand that helping other people is actually good for us. And that is part of survival of the fittest, that we cannot survive as a society if we lose this sense of compassion, because it goes beyond some kind of spiritual mumbo jumbo. It boils down to a very realistic, practical principle that we have to employ every day. And that's what keeps you and all of us alive.
All right, to the phones now we go. Lone Rock, Wisconsin. Casey's with us. And you're on with Joshua Warren, Case. Go ahead.
Hi. I just ended a 20-year relationship with a possessed object. this thing, about 15 years ago, well, 20 years ago, I got it from a friend, and he gave it to me and said that he had found it in the ocean by Miami. It just kind of floated up to him, he said. And so a couple years had passed, and it was in a box, and I decided to wear it. It was a little African carp pendant, you know, made out of wood. And I made a little necklace for it, and that one day that I wore it, some of the strangest things in my entire life happened to me. Went to a street fair, and within 45 minutes, three homeless people on three different streets got down on their knees and bowed to me. Went to go into a store. The guy came out, huge, huge guy, came out very well dressed, and he just stopped and he stood there and he looked at me and he said, "Do you know?" And I said, "Know what?" He said, "Do you know?" I said, "Yes." Then he laughed and said, "I thought you might." And he walked away. That night, I wore it as I slept. And I had a very, very demonic dream where I was in this old mission-style house. It was on fire. And I was just basically being taken into the flames. And there was this really loud yet very quiet, like a whisper in a language I've never heard. Just absolutely unbelievable to me at the time. And the only thing, I ripped myself out of the dream. I said, "Jesus, help me," you know. And all of a sudden I woke up, ripped the necklace off my neck, threw it in the corner. And spent the next 15 years in a box. And, well, actually, that's not true. I took it to a woman who knew a lot about ancient things like this. And she said, "Yeah, bring it into me. I'll tell you exactly what it is. I know all the tribes." You know, I said, "Okay." Brought it in. When I walked up to her, her back was turned. And she's about probably 300 pounds. And when I said, "You know, here it is," brought it in, she turned around, took one look at it, jumped back over about four rows of furniture, and said, "Get that thing away from me." So I did put it out in the car. She explained that it was probably used in a ritual where a soul was attached to it. It was something a shaman had owned. She said it was very rare, not intended to be owned. And, I mean, I'm just kind of freaking out even remembering all this stuff because I just got rid of it this past week. It's on its way to the United Kingdom right now.
And, I don't blame you.
Yeah, and I guess my question is, you know, I had always had the thought, because I'm a Christian, and I felt this presence inside of this thing that was very dark. And I always wanted to destroy it, but I couldn't bring myself to bring it any harm whatsoever. If you do destroy an object like this, is it harmful to you? And does that demon stay with you?
Good question. What do you think, Josh?
Yeah, thank you for that question, Casey. You know, I have spent many years studying this phenomenon of possessed possessions. And I actually own a museum in Asheville, North Carolina, called the Asheville Mystery Museum. And I'm always collecting things to bring back there to the museum. And I'm very particular about the things that I will bring to the museum because I'm aware of these attachments. And any of you who are longtime listeners of Coast to Coast, you know about my research into Robert the Haunted Doll, which is one of my and George's favorite topics. If you take something like we'll say a steel nail, and you stroke it with a magnet over and over and over again, well, in a couple minutes, that nail will become magnetized. And that's because this very strong force that was near it was moving around it in the same direction so long that it eventually sort of polarized the molecules within the nail. And so the nail takes on the attributes of the magnet. It doesn't last forever, but it lasts for a long time. And I believe that is sort of an exaggerated example of what happens to these so-called possessed possessions, that if an object is imbued with spiritual energy, especially ritualistically, so that it takes place over and over again over a period of time, eventually, at very least, that object is going to become sort of an antenna or a conduit for that frequency of energy. Now, of course, on top of that, you could add the possibility that this particular possession is important enough that some spirit would also become attached to it. So these are two possibilities for why that an object might sort of take on this connotation. And I think that when you have an object like that, if you destroy the object and the object was only functioning as an antenna, it's not going to have any negative repercussions for you because all the object was doing was actually creating its own activity. But on the other hand, if that object was precious to some being, to some entity, and that entity was attached to it, then that entity will become very angry that you have destroyed this object. And then there could be repercussions. And so there are a lot of variables involved here in determining whether or not destroying an object like that is going to present something negative. That's why if somebody takes something, for example, like I have a friend who went to some of the catacombs under Paris, and he stole a tooth out of one of the skulls.
Well,
and after he stole the tooth, all kinds of bad luck happened to him. And he went back down to the catacombs, and he realized there's no way I'm ever going to be able to figure out which skull I took this tooth from. So he did the next best thing other than replacing it. He went out and gave it a proper burial, and everything was okay. So, you know, you're always better off if you have an object like that to dispose of it properly, throw it in the ocean, bury it, treat it with respect, rather than just destroying it and trashing it because you don't know exactly what's attached to it.
Let's go to Chip in New York. Welcome to the program, Chip. You're up with us. Go ahead.
Good morning, guys. Great show. Thanks a lot for the subject.
Sure, thanks.
My brother and I, you know, we've had a lot of different experiences with supernatural and spiritual things. And the most strongest thing that's happened to me was I had to have surgery on my neck. And it was major surgery, and thank God everything came out okay. But immediately following the surgery, let me just go back one quick thing. With me and my brother always told me something he read somewhere, that the demons and the darkness can't touch you physically, can't physically harm you, but can mess with things around you. And that statement is the only thing that got me through my experience, because immediately following the surgery, when I'm at my weakest, physical, energy-wise, everything, in my room, I experienced these dark figures that were basically like shadows. They were on the walls and the floors, and they were moving about the room. It was the darkest black I've ever seen, and I'm talking, even in a pitch-black room where you can't see your hand, this was dark, and it blew my mind, and I kind of just put it off as, you know, just, you know, maybe dream or whatnot. And periodically they come in and they take your vitals, and the blood pressure machine in my room was telling the nurses that my blood pressure was sky high, and they were concerned, and doctors would come in and they kept checking me, and they started contemplating blood pressure medicine and all these, you know, different medications they wanted to give me. And at one point, in the middle of the night, a nurse came in and took my blood pressure and said, you know something, wait a minute. And she went out of the room and came in with a portable blood pressure machine and took my blood pressure, and my blood pressure was perfectly normal. There was nothing wrong with it whatsoever. They were going to put me on some Prozac because I was so nervous and distraught over what was going on because I'd seen these things, and I knew that, you know, something was happening in my room that wasn't natural. From then on, the next evening, the overnight nurse or the different nurse came in, took my blood pressure with the machine that was attached in my room. My blood pressure was sky high, and I said, excuse me, can you do me a favor and go get a different blood pressure machine and take it again? And sure enough, she did. She went, she came, she took it. She waited 15 minutes after that and took it again, and both times they were perfectly normal. My blood pressure was fine. There was nothing wrong with me. It was just this evil darkness in the room that was messing with the equipment that was around me. And because of that statement my brother made to me, got me through that night. And to follow up, the minute I got home, I was in my house, in my recliner for the very first time, put my feet up. I closed my eyes for a minute, took a deep breath, and opened my eyes. And sitting on my lap with my legs extended was my angel. No wings. Just a tall man. He was sitting down, but he was tall in stature, blonde hair, blue eyes, and a big, broad smile, and patted me on the leg as if to say, you're home, you're safe, I got you. I closed my eyes again and opened them, and my angel was gone. And experiencing both sides of that coin, right there, it changed me as your experience changed you.
I like that, Josh.
Well, you know, KC, that is a fantastic encounter and experience. And let me just say briefly here that these entities that take energy, they look completely dark and completely black, as you described it, because there's nothing emanating from them. Now, it could very well be that what you experienced was some kind of a dream. I mean, I don't know. But I do know that in many cases, these things, they look dark, and they are in your room, and they're waiting to take energy from you. Will they touch you? I'm not sure. There's a fantastic photo. I have a section called World's Wildest Ghost Photos on my site, joshuapwarren.com, and you will see a photo of what is called the Newbie Phantom. It looks like the Grim Reaper. People all over the world describe seeing this being, and often he slips into their bedrooms at night and watches people while they sleep.
Oh,
and it
geez.
May be that when you're sleeping or when you're in a situation where you're vulnerable, your energy field is available, and these beings are feeding upon it, and that's why they slink around when you are in those situations.
When we come back in a moment with Joshua Warren, whose website, by the way, is linked up at coasttocoastam.com, joshuapwarren.com. Let's talk a little, Josh, about Halloween. It's only a little bit more than a month away, and let's see why that time period tends to bring out more ghosts, more spirits. And if you need to email me, I'll make it easy for you. That's george@coasttocoastam.com. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment with Final Calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back with Final Questions with Joshua P. Warren. Josh, how long are you going to stay in Puerto Rico?
I will be heading back in 3 days. So this is the tail end of my stay here. I am keeping my condo down here, so I think this will become a part-time home for me. I guarantee you I'll be here in the winter. And
yes.
So I'll be kind of traveling back and forth, but I've got so many investigations and tours and programs and all this kind of stuff lined up for the fall, September and October. Then I'm heading back to Asheville for the fall. And one of the things that I know that your listeners will think is pretty funny is that on September 28th, I am the co-producer of Puppy Fest in Asheville, North Carolina. And that actually comes from some work that I did on my book called Pet Ghost. So hopefully they'll come out and see me there at Puppy Fest. And all that kind of information is at
joshuapwarren.com.
I love it. What is it about Halloween that seems to bring out more hauntings, more ghosts, or is that just my perception?
No, you're right. It really goes back to this question, why are there more ghosts seen at night? And one reason, of course, is that, well, often these ghosts are luminous, and so it's easier to see them. But a more in-depth answer includes the fact that when the Earth turns and you're on the Earth on the opposite side of the sun, the magnetosphere of the Earth is much more calm. And now, to help your listeners visualize this, the Earth is surrounded by this big magnetic field called the magnetosphere. And the side of the Earth that's facing the sun is just being blasted by an enormous amount of radiation. And so the side of the Earth that's facing the sun has a magnetosphere that's just really compressed and really held tight. But the side that's not facing the sun is nice and expanded and calm. And in fact, that's why at night you can hear radio stations terrestrially that are hundreds or thousands of miles away. It's because you have a calm magnetosphere and the waves are bouncing at a different angle. And therefore, these subtle electromagnetic waves are much more prominent at night than they are during the day when they're being bombarded by all this solar radiation. So when the fall comes around in our part of the world, in the U.S., well, we are turning away from the sun. The Earth is tilting back away from the sun. So the fall kind of denotes that. I mean, Halloween specifically kind of represents that period when we are shifting away from the sun. So all the paranormal activity picks up. Additionally, in many cases, the air becomes cooler and drier, and electrostatic charges are able to build. And then you add on top of that the desire that people have to see spooky things. And of course, you can never underestimate the amount of power that the human mind has when it comes to manifesting these sort of paranormal phenomena. So you combine all that together, and Halloween is the perfect time for paranormal activity to pick up.
Sure is. Let's go to final calls now. We've got Mike in Florissant, Missouri. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. Without trying to sound arrogant or anything, I think I might be able to shed some light on what the soul actually is.
All right, I'd like to hear it.
Can you hear me?
Uh-huh. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, the soul, in a word, is emotion, and it's the only thing born in time that can escape time. It's not from heaven. Our spirit is from heaven, but the soul is born in time. And what it is, it's the seven powers of the mind, and it's in its potential. That's the soul that's being born. It's in its potential, and that's the vestments, the so-called seven deadly sins, and it cloaks our spirituality, and it conceals it. And when we are born in generation, we're asleep in matter, and only the light of truth will help us turn that around and give us our gnosis or our recovery of consciousness. And that's when the soul is transformed from those seven powers of the mind concerned with generation to the seven powers of the soul concerned with regeneration. And we hand those vestments back by outgrowing them. Like, for instance, imagination becomes comprehension. The five senses that were used for earthly pursuits, we reorganize and use them for higher pursuits. Love of self becomes love of good, and we can become a friend then. Individuality becomes universality. Overcoming the ego is what the Greeks in their Eleusinian rites called the heroic state. So we overcome the ego, because the ego is the root of individuality. Then we lead to legislative and universal mind, which is seeking identity with universal law. And then we reach the point of renunciation. And so the soul is then filled with the blazing sun, so to speak, And that's what we take back to heaven. That's what we're here for, is to take back to heaven. So it's the only thing that can be born in time, that they can escape time.
What's your reaction to that, Josh?
Well, you know, I got to be honest. All I know is that I popped out of a womb, and this is what I got. Okay, I don't know about all these levels and all these relationships. You know, I think we're all in the same boat here. We popped out of a womb, and here we have it. This is the world that we live in, and there is no human being out there who knows anything necessarily more than you about these things. We can all share opinions. We can all share our work, but unless some divine being comes down and communicates directly with you and breaks all this down for you, then at the end of the day, we just have to go upon what we have learned as scientists using this candle in the dark, as Carl Sagan called it, and our own personal experiences. And in my personal experience, what I've seen is that there are some very basic things that all humans have in common. We are conscious, we are aware, and we can learn every day how to practice that awareness and focus it to create a better world, and that better world can thereby be directed to making sure that we don't have any sort of influence from negative forces, and ultimately, I hope that we can create a better society because we're able to move forward and leave those darker influences behind.
A lot of people still don't believe in the heaven and hell concept, Josh. What about you?
Well, I think that heaven and hell is a great sort of allegory. I mean, ultimately, in my opinion, what it boils down to is whether or not you advance or not. I mean, I know there are people who still do not believe in biological evolution. And in my opinion, there is so much evidence for biological evolution. You must believe that evolution exists. I mean, well, you can see it happening right in front of you. That's why that various germs are changing all the time, and we have to update our vaccinations. I mean, you can watch survival of the fittest among chickens. I mean, you can put chickens in a coop, and if you put them all in the middle of Antarctica or Alaska or whatever, you'll see that the ones who have the black spots are the ones who get eaten first, because they're the ones that the predators can see. And so, obviously, this thing called evolution does exist. And I believe that spiritually, it's the same thing, that as we move forth in our lives, those people who have a poor, vulnerable spiritual essence are the ones who are going to be attacked and are going to be weakened and removed. And the ones who have a stronger sort of spiritual essence are the ones who are going to proceed and progress and advance. And so, you know, ultimately, in my opinion, we are talking about a system here in which human beings are able to determine how they proceed based upon how they focus their efforts in a positive direction.
Okay, let's go to final calls. We've got Jared in Inman, South Carolina. Hi, Jared. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking the call.
You're very welcome.
I'm going to try and talk kind of fast because my phone might die.
Ah, okay.
You touched on this earlier, Josh, but I kind of see if you can elaborate on it. About a year ago, I started waking up around 3:00 and 3:30, and seeing like about a 6-foot figure that seemed to be cloaked in the doorway of my bedroom. I started sleeping my bedroom closed. But I always, if I would wake up at that time, I'd feel like it was watching me. And I noticed I have a third shift job now, so I don't see it or anything anymore. But if I'm in any kind of dark space, I still feel like I'm being watched. Or if I'm alone anywhere, I feel like I'm being watched. And I just want to know, could there something be following me that has dark energy?
You know, Jared, I got to tell you, man, I got sort of a cold chill.
You did, didn't you? I could feel
story.
It.
Because, yes, absolutely. I hate to say it, but, you know, as I mentioned before, if you want to see a picture of what these things look like, there's a section on my website at joshuapwarren.com. There's no period after P, where you can see world's wildest ghost photos. One of these photos shows this 7-foot-tall, dark cloaked entity called the Newbie Phantom. And people around the world describe seeing a similar type of entity gliding into their bedrooms at night. In fact, there was a woman, I believe in Connecticut, who every night at 2 in the morning, she would just bolt right up. She'd wake up in bed. And she couldn't explain why, so she set up a video camera. And sure enough, the next day she watched it. It's chilling because about 1:57 in the morning, you see this big, creepy, dark form come gliding up to her bedside. And right before 2 in the morning, it turns and leaves, and then she bolts up. There are these beings that will watch us and absorb from us. And, of course, if you think about it, I mean, when you're sleeping, well, for one thing, you know you're vulnerable. And because you're vulnerable, your bioenergy field is very expanded and relaxed. And so these more advanced, intelligent beings that feed off of our energy are going to go to you when you're sleeping. That's the time when they're going to do it. There are these kind of crude lower-level beings that will just, you know, try to grasp onto you whenever they can. But the ones that are smart, they're going to wait till you're sleeping. And in fact, back in the 1800s, some of the very first psychical research teams in England would always bring a person with them called a sleeper. And that person would go to the haunted spot, and his or her duty was simply to sleep. And the idea was that the latent energy from that person could be used by whatever phantoms were around to feed upon and materialize. And they would have a lot more paranormal activity happen because there was a sleeper nearby. So in your case, Jared, you know, it sounds like that you have a field that these beings are attracted to, and if you want to stop this, as superstitious as it sounds, one of the best things you can do is sprinkle a circle of salt around you. Now, that sounds ridiculous, but you have to realize salt is a crystal, and crystalline forms are able to alter the electromagnetic and, in fact, the electrostatic field in an environment and change whether or not these things are able to appear.
Let's go to Jeff in Culver City, California, west of the Rockies. Hey, Jeffrey, go ahead.
Yeah, how you doing, George and Mr. Warren?
Good.
Yes, when it comes to curses, is it, in your opinion, just a form of telepathy or mind transferences, or do you think that curses emanate from outside supernatural forces which certain individuals can connect with and then focus those curses on the intended target subject? You know, then the targeted person tends to believe that all of the bad luck or misfortune that he or she is experiencing is just a series of coincidences, which I know George doesn't believe in, but I just want to know, you know, your opinion on that, and I'll take your answer off the air.
Well, thank you, Jeff. You know, I think it's both. I must say, I mean, there are certainly scenarios, and we've seen them culturally, when it is made known that a curse is being projected upon someone. And when that happens, well, the person who believes the curse is being directed at him or her obviously is afraid. And, you know, they sort of create the self-fulfilling prophecy. On the other hand, though, I believe that thoughts are like bullets.
They are physical things. If they were not, I mean, how could you move your arms and legs just by thinking about it? I mean, you know, right now you say, I want my arm to move, it moves. You want your leg to move, it moves. It's weird because Newtonian physics tells us for every action, there's an opposite but equal reaction. And you have this idea that there needs to be a physical force to make another physical force to move something. But when you think of something and it moves, we're not sure where the other part of that force is coming from. And so, therefore, we don't know exactly how it works, but we do know that the thoughts have a physical component, and you can fire those thoughts at other people. And if they're negative, they can create a curse.
Josh, let's give out your website, my friend, as we say goodnight.
Well, thank you, George. Go to joshuapwarren.com. There's no period after the P. And also, if you want to go to theobliviousgods.com, you can experience my brand new free audio book. And I look forward to getting everybody's feedback from theobliviousgods.com.
Good job, Josh. Enjoy yourself. Be safe in Puerto Rico when you get there, okay?
Thank you, George.
Joshua P. Warren. And again, his website, simple as that, joshuapwarren.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, John B. Wells, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe.